Good evening, all you beautiful weirdos out there. I have the hyenas here. This is going to be an interview episode, so you'll probably be familiar with the format already. Can you introduce yourselves?
Hi, I'm Sophie. I'm the singer in Hyenas.
And I'm Jessie, bass player.
Lovely. So, how did you get started? What is your absolute beginnings?
So, as individuals or as the band?
All of it. Tell
All
me
of it.
everything.
Oh my goodness. Okay. So, I started my musical dabblings when I was about 5. My older brother, was taking cello lessons, and because my dad was working, my mom would kind of drag us both, and I would have to sit there and wait while my brother had his cello lessons. And his cello teacher had a piano kind of in the waiting room, so I would kind of dabble on the piano. So then I started piano lessons at 5, but then really my calling was the violin. My auntie played violin, and we went on this camping trip. She was playing fiddle, and then so all of When I was 6 years old, at every dinner time, I would take the ketchup bottle and I would take my knife and I would pretend to play the violin because I just wanted to do that so badly. And then, so for my 7th birthday, I got my first violin. So, did kind of music lessons all throughout elementary and high school, and I was a total band nerd and played in high school band and elementary school band and was in a touring fiddle group that we got to play like in Aberdeen in Scotland at this cool youth festival. And all that led me to go to music college in Edmonton, a program called Grant MacEwan. So I did a 2-year diploma there for jazz performance. And my 3rd year, which was also my party year, I did a second diploma in composition. And it was honestly in my 3rd year where I kind of realized, like, I don't want to play jazz. It's very, like, cerebral, but in a sort of like elitist way. And it's just not the way I wanted to express myself. So in my 3rd year, my composition year, I took a songwriting elective. And that was really when I discovered, like, oh, I want to write my own songs and lyrics and sing as well. And then I was like, oh, well, saxophone, which was my major at college, is not super conducive to singing while you're playing. Same with violin, also not super conducive. So I was like, okay, I guess I better learn the guitar. So I fast-tracked learning the guitar. One of the first bands that I was in where it was my own songs, I was so bad at guitar. When we were in the recording studio, I had to play one chord at a time, and then the engineer would stop, and then I would move my hands and then play the second chord, and then so on and so on and so on. So they were very patient with me that that was how we were doing that whole record. Second record was a little bit better than that, thankfully. And then, so in that band, we did some European touring, and it led us to a show at Vancouver Pride Festival where our drummer couldn't make the show. And I asked around some mutual friends, anyone recommend a drummer, preferably female? And Jen Foster was top of the list, who is now our drummer and my fiance.
Oh, I love this.
True love story.
Yes. And then, yeah, let's pass it to Jessie and we can hear how her story also led to Jen Foster and.
And we should mention, we are two of the four hyenas here today. Jen Foster is our drummer, Luvia Peterson's our synth player. But yeah, we have a long history together. And I mean, mine started, first of all, with music. So my dad is a musician and primarily a bass player as well. So growing up, he was always jamming in the house, in the basement with, people, always musicians around. He was in some pretty big bands when I was very young, and he was playing all the time and still is. And he plays almost more than I do these days. But yeah, so there was always instruments around. When I was about 13, I finally told him, okay, it's time for you to give me a lesson and some bass. And a couple of my friends had started a band, so it was perfect timing for me to join as a bass player. And we started playing some 80s hair metal kind of was our thing when we in that band. And and then from there, yeah, I just continued to be in bands all throughout my 20s. And I kind of, I guess I took a break after through high school a little bit, and I went to college as well. This is in Calgary, is where I grew up. And then I was on a Halloween pub crawl one day, and I met someone in the bathroom lineup who had a tattoo of a guitar. And I was kind of shy, and my friend was like, oh, my friend's a bass player, you should totally meet, you know. So she was kind of like my agent, I guess, for me at that time. And it's funny because she had never even heard me play bass, but she just thought, oh, she knew I play bass, so I should know this person who has a guitar on their arm.
Yeah, like, I have a friend who's gay.
Yeah, exactly. You guys must know each other. Yeah. And then that was really a cool turn in my life, because this person who I'd met was like, oh, we're actually looking for a bass player in our band. Why don't you come out and check out a show? Maybe it might be of interest to you. And so I went, and it was, and then I joined the band, and lo and behold, they had this huge queer following, and at the time, I was still a very, you know, closeted baby dyke at that time, and it opened my world to this whole amazing scene of music, but also queer musicians, and really turned my life into a very cool trajectory. In which I dropped out of college and then pursued music, went on Warped Tour and did a bunch of stuff. That was really fun. Toured all over the place. And then eventually in 2008, moved to Vancouver. And but backtrack a few years, when I was 17, actually, I was asked to go jam with some people from high school. And we ended up at Jen Foster's house in her parents' basement. And she was also a very shy, awkward, queer kid that neither of us knew each other were in that same boat. And so we barely talked to each other and jammed a couple times, and that was it. And then a few years later, lo and behold, MySpace comes along, which brings everybody together, right? Well, not these days, yeah. But back then, that was the thing. Mm-hmm. And I found Jen on there. And we just started to connect, and she was living in Vancouver at that time, but then she moved back to Calgary for a bit, and so we were friends over the years. I moved to Vancouver, and her and I knew some friends here, and I immediately joined her band at that time, which was called Low Spin, and we were in that band for a few years, and then we're in a bunch of other bands together after that. And then when the pandemic hit, Sophie and Jen were writing some songs, and in 2021 they said, okay, we're ready for bass, are you ready? Like, well, like, what is even happening with music right now, what's gonna, you know, but I have nothing else to do, so let's do this. And it just seemed a natural progression. I mean, we're best buds, and so we're like, what else are we gonna do, you know? We can be now, if we can have two households in the same bubble, that kind of helped to, they were a couple, and then me, and at the time, Luvia wasn't in the band yet, but Luvia is my wife as well. And so eventually we thought, well, hey, we need some synth. But also, Luvia wanted to, we were talking about, okay, once music was starting to open up again, we thought, what do we want to do? And Sophie mentioned, well, I'd love to tour Europe again, and, you know, making these grand schemes of plans that we never knew, we still don't know if it'll happen, but, you know, dream big, right? And Luvia said, well, I want to come to Europe and I want to be on the tours, but I don't want to just be selling merch or whatever. Yeah. So we're like, well, I guess you better join the band then. So that's how Luvia joined. And now we are a foursome. We're two couples, and it's been really fun. It's best buds, and it's just been, it's been a vacation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's really, really been a dream. Like, we've both been in a lot of bands with kind of varying successes. And honestly, you know, when you're picking who you want to be in a band with, it's not like, oh, who do I want to, you know, play a sold-out show with? It's more like, who do I want to get a flat tire with? Who do I want to, you know, miss our flight with and actually still enjoy the situation, not feel like anyone's pointing fingers or blaming? And it's just like, who can I enjoy being around with all the kind of, you know, parts of the band that aren't super glamorous. And yeah, it just really feels like we found it with this project.
Discorder Magazine has been supporting local music for over 30 years. Thanks to the long-term support of the Rickshaw Theater, Discorder lives. Favorite bands are playing at the Rickshaw Theater. Check out their calendar just behind the cover of Discorder Magazine or at rickshawtheater.com.
I feel like COVID has had some severe negative effects on relationships, but also you find out who you can be alone with for 2 years and keep going.
For sure, yeah. For sure. And honestly, the pandemic felt like it gave us a chance to catch up. Because like Jesse said, you know, we're two household bubbles. We were always kind of in each other's bubble the entire pandemic. So we were able to write and jam and kind of get tight and just put together this, you know, really good set that we're proud of, that when all of a sudden, you know, live music's back, it's like we're ready to kind of break onto the scene. Whereas I think there were some bands also that kind of folded mm-hmm. during the pandemic because, you know, some bands are in it just for the live shows, mm-hmm. you know, and I think that of course was a very discouraging experience for some people. And yeah, it allowed us to kind of plop in to and find our space in the scene.
Yeah. Have you done any live shows yet?
Yes.
Tell me about that.
Yeah,
so we just had our 11th. I was counting this morning when I was getting ready.
I love it.
We got to play at Squamish Constellation Festival last weekend. Sarah McLachlan was one of the headliners. Yeah, July Talk, Dear Rouge. There was lots of amazing, amazing bands.
And we were like, are you sure you want us to be here? You know, we're very new in this band. And I don't even know. I mean, we've all been in bands, like we mentioned, before this. And so we know a lot of people in the music scene. And the people who were running the festival, Tamara and Kirsten, they took a chance on us and they wanted us there. And yeah, that was our 11th show. Our very first show also was a pretty big one. It was opening for the Pack AD, and we played with Fake Shark and at the Rickshaw Theater, which was a pretty unheard of first show for
yeah, everybody, right? To like, play to a sold out rickshaw.
Yeah,
that's a pretty big stuff.
Yeah,
for sure.
So I've been really lucky in that mm-hmm. regard. Play a bunch of really good shows.
Definitely. And yeah, we've done a little bit of touring. We did a Vancouver Island tour in June to promote our first single, Little Trophy, mm-hmm. and we're doing a BC Alberta one in the fall with a sort of pillar date at Fernie Pride Festival.
Okay.
So that'll be
We're playing Vancouver Pride this Friday at Man Up.
Yeah, I guess
the Parade of Pansies
today in
Yeah, in
Radio World.
Real Radio World, yes.
Yes, today.
At 6:30 we'll be on.
Yes.
Opening it up.
Yes, so if this is airing at 5, turn your car around or wherever you're listening and head to Vernon Drive.
You've got an hour and a half to get there. I believe in you, weirdos. Yeah. I might try and make my way out then.
Yeah, for sure.
If it's not absolutely roasting out.
I know.
For those listening to the podcast, it's currently a heat wave. Absolutely deadly.
Yes. Not quite as bad as last year, but it's getting up there.
It's a hot one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So what are your main influences on the band? Like, throw out some names.
Mm. Oh, mm-hmm. musical influences. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Warpaint is a big one for me, especially. I've been a big fan of theirs for a long time. The Go-Go's, I think, are a huge one, and especially as we've been developing our sound, some people have been kind of comparing us to the Go-Go's in that way, a little bit of an 80s kind of flair, but also mm-hmm. lots of harmonies and a bit more rockier than Warpaint maybe would be. Who else?
For me, So Jealous, the Tegan and Sarah album, was one of my first like CDs that I just listened to, couldn't get enough. So for me, which is funny, so I'm a little bit younger than the other three, and so Jesse, Luvia, and Jen all know Tegan and have met her and are friends with her. And I'm just like, I love them so much. But yeah, so for me, yeah, So Jealous was the first record that I was like, what is this? And then probably their record Sainthood, which was two after that, that came out in 2009. That was a big influence for me just in the indie rock sound. Metric also has been a huge influence. Old World Underground, Fantasies, those two records were huge for my influences. I mean, for sure.
How can you be in the Canadian music scene and not be influenced by Metric?
Yes, yes, yeah. For sure.
All right.
Yeah.
How'd you pick Hyenas? I want to know this. And also the spelling. I love it.
Oh, yeah.
I picked up on it.
Yeah.
Tell me.
So, Jen always likes to say, you know, basically all the good band names have been taken, and also most of the bad band names have also been taken. But yeah, we knew a little bit about the animal Hyenas going in, but the more and more we dug in, and Jessie actually found this amazing article that she sent to us over our Slack channel, which we're a band that has a Slack channel because we're all very spreadsheet oriented and we have a Google Drive and all that. But yeah, Jesse sent over this article, and it just blew my mind. So they're a matriarchal society, so it's an alpha female, and they kind of dominate their pack. And the females grow a pseudo penis, so basically they have like a very enlarged labia, and they can choose to open it or close it as they wish. So they cannot be penetrated unless they give their consent. And then also if they, you know, have had intercourse with a male and then they're like, you know what, actually that wasn't who I want to have impregnate me, they can urinate and it just gets rid of all the sperm, and they can find someone better and kind of start afresh. So, and also the cubs are born with their teeth already pierced through their gums and with their eyes open, which is unlike any other mammal too. So they're already just ready to, you know, we are a peaceful band, but it's admirable for animals to just like already be, you know, ready to defend themselves or protect themselves on, you know, against the lions that give hyenas a bad rap. So we were really, yeah, kind of drawn to those characteristics. And we had maybe six names in the running that we sent out to a few close, trusted friends, and Hyenas won by a landslide. Mm-hmm. And we had, it's interesting you bring up the spelling, because we actually picked the spelling because of how the A and the E, the symbol, fit together. So we just kind of liked how that looked, and we liked the, what is it, the ligature.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because there is a variation, there's a couple different spellings. Sometimes you spell it without the AE, but it is also, it is spelled that way.
Yeah, it's so, like the whole class of that species,
I think. And Susie and the Banshees has a hyena song, which also is very awesome.
Yeah, I think it's a record, isn't it?
The whole record, yeah, sorry. Record, yeah.
I like it. I didn't know this about hyenas. All I knew is that they're in the felid category, but they act as canids.
Yeah.
Which is also very cool.
Yeah, for sure. Which, yeah, it's like, is it a cat? Is it a dog? Yeah, it's kind of like plays on the androgyny too. With
queer icon.
Yes, yeah. Exactly.
For sure.
Exactly, they're a queer icon.
Yeah.
You're listening to CITR 101.9, broadcasting from UBC's Point Grey campus, located on the traditional, unceded Coast Salish territory of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people.
So tell me about your recording and, like, song creation process.
Yeah, so we did our first two songs with producer Elisa Pangsang and also with engineer Olivia Kwan, who sadly passed away at the beginning of this month, July 1st, which was just a huge huge loss for the scene. This just, like, not even an up-and-coming rising star. She already was a star. She was at the Junos this year for three songs that she engineered. So we're just absolutely devastated for her family and friends and colleagues in Monarch Studios to hear of that news. But yeah, we did two songs with them, and then we did four more with Jesse Gander at Rain City Recorders, and that brought our EP, which is going to be released early next year. But two tracks are out now. Little Trophy, which I mentioned earlier, and For the Birds came out a week and a half ago, mm-hmm. I think. And our third single comes out September 8th, called It's Not Up to Me, and that's what we're kind of basing our BC Alberta tour around, that single. And the recording process was a dream, you know, getting to work at Monarch and at Rain City Recorders, both amazing local studios. Elisa really got it. It was great. The two tracks we did with her are a little bit more kind of sensitive and raw, and she really kind of pulled out that. And then the four that Jesse did are kind of the more indie rock, synth heavy bangers, and they're a little bit more like poppy, shimmery shine over them. And it's kind of nice to have the records bookended by both of Elisa's tracks, and then Jesse's four are in the middle, so it kind of starts really raw and intimate, have these like, yeah, shiny, high energy, poppy songs, and then ends on a more kind of raw, intimate note, mm-hmm. as well.
Awesome.
And the songwriting process, I mean, it's happened a little bit differently for each song, but I would say most of them, Sophie kind of brings to the table with, okay, here's kind of some guitar riffs and a basic structure to the songs, and she writes all the lyrics, and then we have added some parts over top, or there's been a couple songs that you and Jen wrote together that already kind of had all of the parts done, and then we kind of just finagled them together to make it work for all of us in our individual parts. And there's been a couple songs that... I think, what was it for?
Trophy started with your bass line.
Trophy was a bass line that actually was a recycled bass line from a Low Spin, which was an old band of Jen and I, that never made it to the recording studio. So that brought new life into this band. I would say most of the magic happens in the jam space, but also we love to do, and Jen has been really great with recording all of our demos at home. She's very tech savvy in that way.
She's the tech whiz of our band and of our household as well. Whenever the TV's not working, I'm like, Jen!
So it was cool, actually, over the pandemic to write a bit that way, whereas we would record demos at their place and then be able to, you know, it's really helpful to, you know, learn your parts at home and then bring it to the jam space, or kind of workshop them together in different spaces at home and in the jam space.
For sure. Yeah. And yeah, we are lucky that Jen has those skills of Logic is the program that she uses. And because, yeah, sometimes if you're all jamming together, you can't really hear exactly what's going on, or I'm not necessarily listening to the bass line because I'm focused on, like, oh, what am I playing? But to kind of track it out individually just, yeah, gives you a new perspective to listen back, and is also really useful, you know, when we're sending demos to the two producers we worked with. It gives them a better idea of what we're going for rather than just like a jam space recording. Although we always talk about, you know, what, because we've all been in bands for, you know, coming on 2 decades.
200 years.
Yeah, 200 years. 80 years combined.
Yeah.
Before you had a recorder on your phone, like, you would just have to remember.
I know, how did we do that?
There was such a lot, like, did you ever have those little mini cassette tape recorders?
Oh,
like,
I'm not that old.
Yeah.
No, I'm just kidding. We did have one,
I feel like we could, like, have a museum of just, like, all the steps of how we recorded our jam space audio.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's put on one of your singles and then we'll come back and talk about it.
Yeah, great.
So you've just been listening to
For the Birds.
For the Birds.
Yeah, that's a song about smashing the patriarchy, basically. But a few other things.
Yeah.
Sophie, you want to elaborate on that?
Yeah, for sure. So basically, kind of backtracking to the pandemic, the band that I was in before when I met Jen, it, you know, had some kind of unfortunate things happen in it. I had a falling out with the bass player, or not even really a falling out, but just a realization of like, oh wow, this person is very toxic and I am no longer wanting to have this person in my life, which was a very hard thing because we'd made this band together. We'd played for 5 years. So after that, I did need a bit of a break of like, ugh, this is too much. But then when the pandemic hit, it really felt like, what am I waiting for? Like, why am I not writing songs? Why am I still so like, oh, I can't kind of feelings? And it's like, you know what? No one knows what's going to happen. Just do it. And also in the pandemic, too, I found that because your whole life is like, go, 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 go. All of a sudden, I felt a lot of grief from things that had happened to do with the band, but also to do with things from my childhood that I just hadn't addressed. And then all of a sudden you have a minute to just sit and you're like, whoa, I am not over this at all, or like, I need to put in some work to like get through this. And so I was really inspired to write some songs based on the cycle of grief. So denial, anger, bargaining, depression, and acceptance. So For the Birds was actually the first song that I wrote since my previous band, and so it is about smashing the patriarchy, but is also centered around the theme of denial. So not even necessarily like to do with denial and grief, but to do with, you know, how people are like, well, racism isn't really a thing anymore, sexism isn't really a thing anymore, you know, and how people do say that, and because their worlds are fine, they're denying that there is still so much work that needs to be done. So that song is also about that as well.
Join us every other Wednesday from 6:30 to 8 p.m. for Sam Squanch's Hideaway with your host, Anita B., as she plays all Canadian music with a focus on indie rock and pop.
Yeah, I definitely spend an unfortunate amount of time around people who just are, I wouldn't say blind to it, but like willingly shutting their eyes to it.
Just put their head in the sand, or like to stay in their comfort zone and not have these uncomfortable conversations and even self-realizations of like, wow, I'm like, have these unconscious bias that I need to also work on, which is
very much a reason of the patriarchy, right? In the colonial world that we're in and that we've all felt in one way or another.
Yes,
right?
For sure.
Yeah.
There is very few places in this world where you can step away and get outside it.
Yes, for sure.
Exactly.
All right. Tell me about the recording process for this song. Like, I want to specifically hear where it came from.
Yeah, so this one was it one we did with Jesse Gander at Rain City Recorders. And it's funny, because when you record, you don't really do one song at a time. We did these four songs with Jesse live off the floor, which means that we're recording all the instruments together at once, because that way you really capture that energy. Mm-hmm. So Jen's playing drums, Jesse's playing bass, I'm playing guitar. I think Luvia was even playing keys too, just to kind of capture that vibe. So we did all four songs kind of at once live off the floor. And then you come back and, you know, really, so you're recording all of them, but really just to capture the drums and to get that live sound. But then Jesse's such an amazing bass player that I think we kept most of the bass too. I don't think you went and redid.
Yeah, I mean, we did a few tracks and picked which one together I think the bass and the drums sound the best with, and really in the pocket. And and then sprinkled guitars and synth and all sorts of.
Yeah, that was one of the highlights of working with Jesse, is he's such a gear nerd, like the most wonderful gear nerd. And so we had all these crazy pedals for my guitar. I don't even know what they're called. I should know.
Space Echo.
Oh, yeah, Space Echo. So there was, this one pedal where it was an analog pedal, which means it's got like a tape,
in it. Oh, it's
Tape in it. So it's not like a cassette tape, but it's got like a string of tape, and you can see it inside the pedal, like wriggling around like a weird worm from Stranger Things or something, just like and just creates the most amazing, cool effect. So I definitely had a lot of fun with Jesse, like getting to plug my guitar into all these crazy effects. And then Luvia was also just like in heaven with all of Jesse's cool synths that he has.
He is a synth player, so he's very knowledgeable on all of that.
Yes, really. And one of the synths was called the Matriarch, too.
That's perfect.
So that was perfect also for this song. And then, for vocals, we actually had, do you know Siobhan's last name?
Walsh.
Yeah. We had Siobhan Walsh come in and do a little bit of, you know, on-the-fly vocal coaching, too. Mm-hmm. Which was nice to kind of feel like you're getting the best out of yourself, too, in that vocal booth.
Yeah.
All right. That's so cool. I definitely got the idea that Jesse Gander is a gear nerd when I had him for the interview.
Yes.
As I'm sure all of my audience would be aware of at this point. Should we go on to your next track?
Sure. That sounds great.
So we've been listening to
Little Trophy.
Little Trophy. All right. Tell me about it.
Yeah. So this was the first song that got released. This was kind of our intro onto the scene because, we were a band for a while before we had any music released. So this felt extra special to like throw out your firstborn and is anyone going to like it? Yeah, so this was one that we did at Monarch with Liv and Elisa. This recording process was a little bit different. At Rain City, we were cushy and we had 4 days to do 4 songs, whereas at Monarch, we had 2 days to do 2 songs, which you would think would equal the same amount of time, but it actually doesn't because a full day is set up, half a day is tear down, so then it works out to kind of half a day for 2 songs. But we got to work, we made it happen. Elisa's really, really, picky is the wrong word, but exacting about drum sounds. Mm-hmm. That's one of her really big things is kind of producing the drums and a lot of time spent on the snare sound. Jen has in recent years become a snare collector, it feels like. I'm like, can't you just have one?
No, you absolutely can't.
But all our money.
Yeah. Someone who did percussion in high school Getting a good snare sound is almost impossible, and you have to tune the things.
Totally.
Sorry, this is your interview.
Yeah. So it's, no, for sure, it's good.
Jen is piping in here from the ether saying, thank you.
That's for sure. Yeah, so I think she played a different snare on almost every track of the record.
It has to be in key.
Yes, for sure. Yeah, so Little Trophy was, so this was, we did it at Monarch, and this one feels longer ago. It's harder to kind of pull up the memories. We recorded it September of 2021.
Yeah.
Yeah, so coming up for, 9 months ago.
Yeah.
But yeah, like I said, Liv and Elisa were dreams to work with too. We also had a studio assistant, Aaron Klassen, work with us in that session, and he's one of our best buds, so it was nice to have him around.
Who's also a drummer, so it's all about the drums.
Yes, yeah, for sure. Yeah, and now he works at Monarch, so because of that session with us. So, so that was good.
Yeah. Awesome. Okay, so... Yeah, we've got enough time.
I guess I could talk about what Little Trophy's about.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, please tell me.
Yeah. So Little Trophy was inspired by a long-distance relationship that I was in before Jen. And I was just getting really pissed off because it felt like I was doing all the planning to, like, you know, like, let's plan these fun visits and these fun trips together. And we did do fun things. Like, they lived in the States, so we, you know, went to the Grand Canyon together and did all these really fun things. But it felt like I was doing all the heavy lifting and they were just sitting back and enjoying the, you know, fun trips and the sexy times. And so that kind of inspired that. And then just in general, you know, us as women, just how much we have kind of unwanted, like, sexual advances, or just how we are brought up to think that we have to look a certain way, act a certain way, dress a certain way, but oh, not quite that certain way, and just, you know, all that fucking bullshit that we just all have to deal with. And as, and too, I feel like as queer women, you know, we are often, like, over sexualized too by onlookers, and or not taken seriously. You know, there's lots of times where, I mean, it is nice. I feel like things have gotten better for sure. Now there's a lot of sound techs who are female or non-binary or queer, or also just men who are, I feel like, a little bit nicer. Like, I feel like the grumpy sound guy feels a little bit like a thing of the past. We haven't experienced it in this band at all, but I certainly have experienced it in other bands where they assume you're, oh, are you just, like, the girlfriend, or like, oh, do you know where to, I'm like, oh, my, something's not working, and they're like, well, did you turn it on? It's like, believe it or not, I checked that before I said,
trying to explain to us how our amps work. Our guitar cables are to be plugged in, and it's a thing.
Or even, like, the microaggressions of coming off stage and people saying, oh, that was actually good, and they think they're saying something nice, and it's like, man, no.
Oh, you're so good for a female bass player.
Whoa, Jen's the best female drummer I've ever seen.
Does not leave a bitter taste in my mouth at all to hear these things.
It's actually vomit induced.
Yes, for sure. So Little Trophy feels like a kind of a fuck you to all of that. Am I allowed to say that on here?
I'm just quiet about it.
Just a big beep you. Just a beep you.
I don't have a beep button. What I do is I just turn the volume down.
Oh, yeah. Swear.
It's fine.
Lots of volume drops in this interview.
As someone who's put a lot of practice into being on the radio, my first few episodes, I was like, oh no, I have to re-record, like, every 4 minutes. I'm like, stop. Okay, start again. So it's fine.
Yeah.
Well, if Luvia and Jen were here the whole time, you would be bleeping that.
They're our sailor wives.
I feel like I get along with them.
TransCare BC works to enhance the coordination of trans health services across the province and offer expanded health services to support transgender communities. They are doing this by developing gender-affirming client-centered models of service, ensuring access to gender-affirming and supportive healthcare that is equitable and available, and supporting network development to make sure trans and gender-diverse individuals, their families, and healthcare providers have access to information, resources, and support. Check out phsa.ca to learn more about this program and lend your voice to help create an inclusive and supportive system for trans members of our community.
All right. I want to know what your ideal, like, trajectory for this band is.
That's a great question. I mean, already it feels like we're off to a great start with our show with the Pack at Rickshaw. We got to play Catalano Festival a couple of weeks ago, the Squamish Consolation Fest. We've got Vancouver Pride tonight, 6:30, and Fernie Pride Festival that we're doing in the fall. And yeah, really, we just want to make art that we're really proud to stand behind, which I feel like we really have done with this EP. I'm really excited already to write our second record. We are working with Jane Arora from Arrival Sounds for sync licensing, so she's pitching to get our music in shows and movies, which is a dream that I've always had that I haven't got to experience in other projects before. And yeah, touring, I've toured in Europe 4 or 5 times, but with a person that made it pretty unfun, and I just can't wait to go with these three women who I just love to death. And so yeah, we're hoping to do some Europe stuff. I'd love to go to Toronto maybe next year, do some Eastern Canada stuff. The States is always a little bit trickier because you need a visa, whereas it's kind of outrageous how it's easier to go to Europe to tour paperwork-wise than it is to go to the States. But eventually I would love to do West Coast.
There's also a festival in the States I really want to do that somebody just told me about. It's a newer one, Some of Us in Yosemite.
Oh,
wow. And it's a queer festival. So that's on the goal list.
Okay, for sure. I will start envisioning it before I go to sleep every night.
All right, that's awesome. Yeah. I didn't know about this either, so...
Someone just told
me. Road trip!
I've never actually been to the States, but also it's fun to find out that going to the Europe is easier for bands.
Yeah.
Like, all of my favorite bands from Canada are like, oh yeah, we're doing a European tour. Isn't that, like, crazy expensive? No, apparently not.
I mean, it is expensive for flights and gear rental, but the paperwork and the bureaucracy portion is less.
Well, and once you're there, because there's so many cities all close together, it's easier to not have to drive 8 hours to your next show. Whereas in Canada, it's very much that.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And I think just European culture is a lot more arts-based and music-based, whereas North America is a bit more sports-centric, and, you know, we've all played those shows where they're watching the TVs and watching the hockey instead of watching the band play, or you'll hear a cheer from the crowd and you're like, oh, they like it, and you realize that someone scored. You know, so yeah, it's nice to play more
focused venues.
Exactly.
All right, so tell me about where we can find your stuff. Tell me about everything.
Yes. Great. Wrap. So we're on everywhere that you can find anything. We're most active on Instagram. We're at Hyenas Band. Hyenas is spelled Hyenas Band. So we're most active on that. Our music's on Spotify. If you want to, and on Apple Music, anywhere you like to listen. We're also on Bandcamp, where you can purchase the song if there's anyone that still purchases.
It's got $1 for a song.
Yeah.
Literally all my music comes off of Bandcamp right now.
Oh, amazing. So, amazing.
Good.
Yes.
Big reps.
Yes, for sure. Yeah, and you can find us playing locally tonight. We're also playing August 5th at the Wise Hall. We're playing August 6th in Port Moody at Brujala Festival. And we're playing August 19th at Redgate, where Marisa's doing sound.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I will definitely be there for... If anyone wants to come down and meet me, I will be there for the August 19th show, because that's my birthday.
Oh, my God!
Well, the 15th, but then I'm going to go to Redgate for my birthday.
Yeah, amazing.
Excellent. Yeah.
And I might, like, give my listeners a bit of a spoiler. Maybe I could do a like, live recorded set of the concert and do select pieces for the show.
That would be wonderful. Amazing. Yeah, for sure.
Because I just did that last week for Emily Best.
Cool. Yeah.
So, you know.
That'd be great.
Something to look out for, weirdos.
Yes.
Alrighty. Music dropping. Tell me the dates. Do you have dates?
Oh, yes. So our next song coming out? Mm-hmm. Yes, September 8th, It's Not Up to Me, comes out. Our single after that, October 20th, Another Level, which is actually the day after my birthday. So that's going to be a big birthday celebration. And our EP coming out early 2023.
Okay, sounds good. Yeah. Alrighty. Thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you so much for having us. This was lovely.
Thanks for listening, everyone. Yeah.
It's been an absolutely wonderful interview, and I hope I get to do more stuff with y'all later.
Yes, too.
Thank you to all you beautiful weirdos out there in the wilds of the Pacific Northwest making noise. Making you all of our problems. This wouldn't be the same without you. You can catch this episode as a podcast on CITR 109FM's website under the same name, and I'll be right back at you in a week. Same place, same time, so don't touch that dial. I've been your host, Coraline, and I am signing off for this week. Until next time, you are now exiting Pacific Noise Weird.
I'm Shani from NFC. You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
Stubborn I was, playing dumb again, as one does. Intentional clutter, added to the pile. Myself that I tried. incoming gridlock. It's not ours, blaring headlights. From the other side, split routine, no. It's an early night, so clear your mind. What is left?
I'm Sukyin Lee, and you're listening to CITR 101.9 FM, yeah, in Vancouver.